let me tell you about the chicken grease. Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring sustainability, local foods, and other forward-thinking schools of culinary thought to the minds and kitchens of everyday folks. Our conversations cover the entire spectrum of food enthusiasts, from renowned culinary masters to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking tools for happy and healthy eating and American lunchroom. In the age of Googling cooking techniques and nifty iPhone apps for food lovers, having a printed illustrated guide is pure joy. In the studio, we have Carlin Greenstein and Annie Stranger, the creators of Chew On This. Greetings, guys, and welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
What is Chew On This?
Well, this is Annie, by the way. We started Chew On This simply as an effort to inspire our friends in the same way that we had been inspired about eating locally and seasonally. We began by hosting a couple of breakfasts here and there, and the tools really came out of an effort to give our friends and other people, eventually, a way to take with them some of the knowledge that they gained when they were having the meal with us.
Carlin, you're a private chef,
yes.
Right? When did you realize that your clients and friends, like Annie just talked about, when did you realize they needed a food wheel, an actual illustrated food guide when you were preparing food for them?
Well, I think the idea came out for me. I love farmers markets, and I spend as much time as I can at farmers markets whenever I'm traveling or in New York. And I found that as I was doing my shopping, I'd overhear people saying, when are tomatoes, you know, going to be in season, or how long is the asparagus here? And I felt like as much time as I was spending in the farmer's market, I actually couldn't answer the specific questions myself. And so I really delved into the idea of a tool, and I loved the research of interviewing farmers to get a sense of when things were coming in season and how long they were around.
So tell me more about your background as a private chef here in New York City.
I've been a private chef for 10 years. I was cooking in San Francisco before I came to New York 7 years ago. And I think clients hire me predominantly because I really love to source locally and seasonally. That's really where my inspiration comes from. People say, well, what's your favorite thing to cook? And I'd say, well, it depends on the week or the month. Because for me, you know, working with watermelon in November is never an option. I want to work with all the amazing root vegetables and the leafy greens. And I find that my body craves those things based on what time of year it is.
So, Annie, I told you before the show that I absolutely love your letterpress print of Eating is a Political Act. Yeah. I have it in my kitchen. I framed it.
Thank you.
I actually met you guys at the Brooklyn Food Conference back in, was that like April or May?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did your design work evolve into wheels and letterpress? And I saw this really cool project on your website, the Linens Project. How did it all evolve into focusing on food?
Well, for me, I had the disadvantage of not being a chef, not being a scientist, not being any of the things that a lot of people that I knew who are really involved in this movement have as a background. So I was really looking for a way to bring my greatest talent to this. And I was fortunate enough to meet Carlin. And, you know, this idea of creating a tool just sort of evolved out of our talking over time. And it was just sort of a natural fit. I love information design specifically as a part of graphic design. Mm-hmm. And this was just the perfect chance to take what I love to do and create something beautiful and functional that can hopefully inspire other people to do the same kinds of things that Carlin and I love to do when it comes to eating.
Tell me more about your other, I know Chew On This is a beautifully designed project, but your other food projects. Like the linens. I think I love that linens.
Yeah. I think overall I was looking for things that were kind of permanent. So much of what we do as designers is a lot, you know, designing things that are tossed away really quickly. And linen is something that you'll keep around. And so a lot of what I'm trying to do in my personal time is to create things that are useful, that are beautiful, and things that, you know, people will cherish and keep with them for a long time. And it's even better, you know, something like the wheels where it can really be informative.
And for our listeners who are probably trying to figure out what am I talking about when she's talking about, there was a great project. I think a group of artists got together and they did really cool statements on vintage linen.
Oh, that was all me.
Oh, that was all you. Wow. Okay. Wow. Brilliant.
Gathering my relatives around a kitchen table a few times. Wow. And coming up with, in this case, you know,
really. Well done. Well done. So talking more about food and design, I have not seen this Milton Glaser documentary called To Inform and Delight. Have you guys seen it?
No.
So people are telling me that it's not about just Milton Glaser as this great designer, but it's him going to different restaurants all over the city, talking about his favorite foods and shopping seasonally. So what is the connection between great food and design? I'm hearing both of you guys talk and how you guys married each other in terms of design and food. What do you see as the connection between food and design?
Well, I for one will actually buy a product if it's packaged in a beautiful package. You know, I love going to the farmer's market or going into a little gourmet shop, and I'll find a chutney that just looks so incredible based on the design. And I think that's something Annie and I really talked about a lot when we were coming up with the wheels, is that you want the design to really reflect the item, but also just appeal to the eye of the consumer in a way that feels exciting and also accurate. And I think that's something that we really tried hard to do with the wheels.
So when you're preparing dinner for a chef, are you looking at the vegetables at Union Square Market? It's like, oh, this is a piece of art, or how are you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really get into plating. I was a food stylist for a little while.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so for me, even if I'm cooking a meal just for myself or for my husband, I love making a beautiful plate. I think the first thing you do before you consume it is you devour the meal or the plate with your eyes. And so even if it's something as simple as sautéed greens and quinoa, I want it to be in a beautiful bowl with black quinoa and bright green leaves. And it's just, I really love the visual of food because the textures, the colors, I mean, nature just provides the most amazing array on its own.
Totally, totally. We're going to take a short break and we're going to come back with you guys and we're going to get more into the details of the wheels. So keep listening and we'll be back after a short break.
Boys and girls, listen up. You can be anything in the world, and God we trust. An architect, doctor, maybe an actress, but nothing comes easy. It takes much practice. Like, I met a woman who's becoming a star. She was very beautiful, leaving people in awe. Singing songs, Lena Horne, but the younger version. Hung with the wrong person, got a stronger that. Sniffing up drugs all in her nose. Could have died so young, now looks ugly and old. No fun, cause now when she reaches for hugs, people hold their breath, cause she smells of corrosion and death. Watch the company you keep and the crowd you bring, cause they came to do drugs and you came to sing. So if you're gonna be the best, I'ma tell you how. Put your hands in the air and take the vow. I know I can,
I know I can
be what I wanna be,
be what I wanna be.
If I work hard at it,
if I work hard at it,
I'll be where I wanna be.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.com. We're chatting with the brains behind an illustrated guide to 40 Culinary Herbs and the New York Area Food Wheel. So we are going to get into the wheels. We have two wheels. Some of you listeners who may be at your computer now, you can go on, what's your guys' website?
ChewOnThis.org.
You can actually see the illustrated wheels, and we're just going to kind of go through some of the wheels. It's really cool. I actually have the 40 Culinary Herbs wheel on my refrigerator, and I look at it almost weekly. So you guys just explain to us, like, how many herbs. Of course, we know there are 40 on there, but some of the herbs.
Sure. So the wheel is arranged with all of these culinary herbs around the outer edge. And we've, you know, just kind of tried to pick things that, you know, there's a range, everything that's from things that are very common through things that a lot of people actually haven't even seen before. And to be honest, I was quite informed in making this wheel. There were some things that I had never heard of before. The wheel provides information about the edible parts, the common uses, and some preservation methods for each of the herbs. And then the backside, Carlin has provided us with a few really fantastic tips to get started. You know, why using fresh herbs is sort of the way to go, but also some information about how to use dried herbs, preserved herbs, and then a few recipes and some ideas to get started.
So how did you guys come up with the 40 herbs?
It's kind of a matter of space.
So did you guys just come up with, okay, these are the common use herbs that people are using, and then here are some ones we want to kind of throw in the mix that people may not be using?
And also what we'd see at the farmer's market. I think that was definitely, you know, things like lemon balm that might not be as common, but we see at the farmer's market. Or
okay, so let me go to, what's that one? That's something that I probably never buy. Lemon, what is it?
Lemon balm.
Is it in alphabetical order? It is.
Right here.
Okay, yeah. Lemon balm. So if I go to lemon balm, and so edible parts is the first category. So the leaves are edible. Common uses: fish, meat, roasted vegetables, soups and stews, tea, salads, sweets. So tell me, chef, I've never used lemon balm. Do you have a quick recipe?
I mean, my favorite thing, especially this time of year with lemon balm, is making a tea. You know, I have a little garden on my sill in the kitchen, and I just pick a few leaves and steep it in hot water and put a little bit of honey or agave in it, and it's just so delicious and much subtler than just squeezing a half lemon, which is delicious as well, but not local to New York. And so when you can use fresh herbs, you get that subtlety.
Right.
And it's really delicious.
So the whole freezing of herbs, I've never tried this. I always say, I buy all these herbs, and then two or three days later, I've used only half of them and I'm throwing them out. And I'm like, why didn't I do the freezing method? Can you talk a little bit about how? I see you have it on the back. No, it's not on the back. But tell us how to freeze, like, a common herb that's on this wheel.
You know, I tend to do, if I get a bunch of fresh herbs, I mean, this was something we talked about when we made this wheel, that people will buy a big bunch of rosemary and they realize they only need one sprig of it.
Right.
So what do you do with the rest of it? And I think oftentimes the best way to preserve herbs is actually to dry it.
Okay.
But freezing, the best way to freeze something like basil is to make something like a pesto.
Gotcha.
And then throw it in your ice cube tray. And once it's frozen, put it in a Ziploc bag. And then you have ready-made pesto even in the middle of the winter when basil's not growing.
And I'm sorry, the tips for herb preservation, it's on the front of the wheel. It says it's the drying method is on there and the freezing method.
Yes.
So it's right on the front of the wheel. That's great. Another one, that was lemon balm. Maybe other people knew about lemon balm. I didn't. I've never even seen it at farmers markets. Is it a seasonal? I mean, is it just always around, or?
You know, I think we usually find it in summer. Summer, yeah.
Okay. So moving on to when we're talking about seasonal herbs or products, the second wheel. I don't know. I haven't seen this one, so I'm going to give it to one of you guys.
Yeah.
This is the
the local foods wheel. And on the periphery, we have the months of the year. And then we took all the fruits and vegetables that grow in this region. And poor Annie, every time I'd come up with another vegetable that I wanted to add in, she'd say, "We don't have room for any more." And I'd say, "But we have to have fennel. Or what about ramps or fiddleheads?" I get very attached to the vegetables. So what we did was we have those on the inside of the inner wheel, and as you turn it, it tells what's growing in season when, even by peak and availability. So you have a sense of what's growing week to week, and as it fades out, as the season's ending. So it's looking bleak as we get into the next couple months, so unfortunately.
All we have is potatoes probably. What are we in month? We're in November?
A lot of root vegetables. We've got, potatoes and squashes and actually the cauliflower, and a lot of the leafy greens are still pretty happy.
It's so funny. I was at Union Square, I think, on Friday. I still saw people with tomatoes, and I'm like... Yeah. I'm like, is that weird or what?
We haven't had a real frost yet, so.
Exactly. So we're talking about the herbs and the seasonal vegetables. What are some of you guys' favorite herbs to always have on hand in your fridge or some of your seasonal herbs?
I think for me, I only shop at the farmer's market, mm-hmm. so I'm kind of always subject to what's going on there. But I do enjoy sort of experimenting with new things. One of the goals I set out for myself when I first started trying to eat locally was to try something new every week. Mm-hmm. And along with that came lovage and sorrel, which are two very interesting herbs. And so I've gotten a chance to try those. I think they've become my favorites kind of because they're sort of weird. but also, this time of year especially, there's the standbys of, rosemary and thyme that pretty much get you as far as you need to go, especially for somebody like me who's not as skilled in the kitchen as Carlin.
So who would you say, should I give this as a gift or who should be buying this? Either the herb wheel or the local fruits and vegetables wheel?
I mean, I find that even my friends who are private chefs have been excited by the idea for the same reason I was drawn to doing this. But I also, I have friends also who maybe don't shop at the farmer's market because they don't have time. And so they're not in tune necessarily with what's growing in season when. And the culinary herb wheel, it's the same thing. Maybe they get a bunch of time and then they don't know how to preserve it or what else they can do with it. And that's something that's really helpful. So I think it appeals to anyone who really likes to cook.
Or anybody who's into functional design.
Yeah, right. Of course.
And this is so funny. I was, before the show doing research about wheels, and this is a very, 1960? This so reminds me of in elementary school, you would get these bookmarks and you push up and down. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
Definitely. And it'll be different things. And I just think this is a great throwback to bring. Was this really popular, in the 80s, 70s? When?
Yeah, there's a couple of books out that are really fantastic. And I think it actually goes back to the 50s, when people literally had to use, it's kind of almost like a ruler, like something that was very functional that could provide a lot of data in a little bit of space. And so the wheel, for me, actually, in designing this, it was really about maximizing the space, too. I really wanted it to be provide as much information as possible. That was important to me. And a lot of that inspiration came from some of these older wheels. It wasn't just about creating something that was pretty. And, obviously when you were creating something for, I don't know, I've seen them for everything from complicated equations.
Multiplication. That's what it was. Okay.
To World War II airplanes. I mean, wow. People have done these wheels for virtually everything and it totally makes sense to apply it to, food.
It's beautifully designed. So I have my wheel. I have my vegetables, I have my fruits, and it's November. You guys have really great cookbook recommendations on your website. Mm-hmm. What do you suggest? I know I saw Alice Waters and Mark Bittman, Outstanding in the Fields. These are all cookbooks that we've talked about here on Hot Grease. Please tell us some cookbooks, your favorite cookbooks, both of you guys.
I'll start with the novice version.
oh my God, you're not a novice.
I honestly think... not to give everything to Alice Waters, but for me, she was my introduction, and I still use Chez Panisse vegetables every week, because for me, there's a lot of things that are still really new, and she provides really easy recipes. The book is broken up by vegetable, and then she'll also tell what season, how to prepare it, how to look for it, and, you know, there's always a way for me to make something that's simple, and then I get to know the vegetable and I can experiment from there. So I would highlight for anybody out there who doesn't know what the heck they're doing, I'd say you can start with Chez Panisse vegetables and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And I know you have tons of cookbook references.
I do. I'd say one of my favorite cookbooks is by a chef in Los Angeles. She has several restaurants, and it's called Sunday Suppers at Luke. Ooh, wow. And I really love the photography is incredibly beautiful, but she divides the chapter by winter, spring, summer, fall. And so while she's cooking in LA, and you know, she is more readily access to citrus and pomegranates and things that we don't get at our farmer's market, it still, for me, inspires me especially when I'm doing dinner parties for a lot of this incorporating flavors and techniques that I don't do on my everyday cooking.
So did I see on you guys' website recipe cards?
Yes, that's a new thing. With a new launch. You know, I think it's another, in a way, it's another throwback. You know, I think a lot of people are just printing stuff out from the internet now, and they don't really keep recipe boxes anymore. But for me, it's still a fantastic gift opportunity.
Them.
They're super cute. And, you know, it's just another little functional design piece that's, you know, really nice to have around.
I love it. I think it's great when you're at a dinner party and you give that as a gift for your guests of coming over. And people can just write them down, or they can swap, because a lot of times at dinner you have this great conversation about a cocktail that you made. People can just pull it out and write it down. And yeah. I love the idea. So tell me, if folks wanted to get the Wills recipe cards or even look at your cookbook recommendations, tell us your website again. I think you told us that. And then where the cards are in New York City and throughout the United States.
Well, the website is, again, chewonthis.org. The Wills themselves are available in the New York area in a few shops, Stinky Brooklyn, Blue Hill, of course. And you can see all of this on our website as well. We've got a pretty good list. But the website carries the recipe cards that are not yet available in shops. We're still kind of working on that. So
great holiday gift.
We're hoping to, continue along those lines and, you know, continue to develop new products as this grows. It's, it's definitely like running the business side of the business is new to both Carlin and I. So we're hoping to have some more opportunities come down the road.
Well, they're beautiful designs.
Thank you.
I really, really, really love them. I planned on buying quite a few.
Oh, we look forward to that.
For the holidays. And I want to say thank you, ladies, for stopping by Hot Grease today.
It was our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you. 96 ways I made out. Waited, but F-E-L-L-A. Verbal shit, break, dip the tattoo. Jump out the range, empty out the ashtray. A glass of Zay, making mad cashes. Play red dot plots. Murder schemes, 32 I rung. Regulate with my number 17 rocks. Gleam from one ring. Yo, let me let y'all people know one thing. There's one life, one love, so there can only be one king. Life, I wonder, will it take me under? I don't know. Imagine smoking weed in the street without cops harassing. Imagine going to court with no trial. Lifestyle cruising blue behind the waters. No welfare supporters. More conscious of the way we raise our daughters. Days are shorter, nights are colder. Feeling like life is over. These snakes strike like a cobra. The world's hot, my son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the garbage, we'd all have the top dollars. Imagine everybody flashing. Fashion, designer clothes. Lacing your click up with diamond rolls. Your people holding dough, no parole, no rubbers. Going raw, imagine law with no undercovers. Just some thoughts for the mind. I take a glimpse into time. Watch the blimp read, the world is mine.
If I rule the world,
imagine that.
I free all my sons. I love them, baby. Black diamonds and pearls.
Could it be if you could be
welcome back to
to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. This program is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York, the location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. The web is full of beautiful photos of what adults are eating for breakfast and lunch. Where are the pictures of school lunches? We have the answer, AmericanLunchroom.com, the best place to find the good, bad, and ugly of lunchrooms across America. On the phone, we have Hillary from American Lunchroom. Welcome, Hillary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What is AmericanLunchroom.com?
AmericanLunchroom.com is a site of a collection of photographs submitted by people around the country of the lunch trays served in schools across the country, elementary school, middle school, and high school. And it's pretty much just a photograph with a short description of what it is and what type of school it is, and no editorial beyond that, just photographs. And I think the photographs speak for themselves.
Totally. Very simple and beautiful photos. Where did the idea come from?
The idea came because I used to work at an elementary school in Brooklyn, and I was pretty appalled by what I saw being served for lunch. And when I talked to my friends and family members that didn't work in the schools, they were also surprised. I started taking my own photographs and soon thereafter started showing them to people, and I realized what an interest there was. And so my husband and I actually started the site together. We launched it with the idea of exposing everyone with an internet connection to what's being served and also comparing to see what other school districts across the country might have better solutions for what our kids are eating, or maybe just further evidence of a need for change.
Give us an example of some of the photo submissions that I think the current one you have is like a hamburger or pear and 1% milk, and I think it's from a school in Brooklyn.
Yes, I think the current one is from a high school in Brooklyn. So there's a lot of hamburgers. There's a lot of fried food, mozzarella sticks, chicken fingers. I'm trying to think what else. Sometimes baked chicken, spaghetti, tacos. It depends. There's quite a variety, but I have to say I think hamburgers are the most common.
And I saw tons of fruit and syrup, which is like crazy, like prepackaged fruit and syrup. I don't know why so many photos of that, but I guess that's what kids are eating.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of prepackaged everything. There's a grilled cheese sandwich one day, and that was from the school I used to work. And it's packaged in plastic, and it's actually baked inside of the plastic, too.
Oh, my God. That is horrible.
So they put the whole tray of sandwiches baked in plastic in the oven and then pull them out. So I don't even like to think of what toxins might be escaping the plastic, aside from the fact that grilled cheese probably isn't very nutritious to begin with.
So besides the bad of school lunches, do you have any photos on your website or that are examples of great lunches throughout America?
Yeah, we actually had a submission from Berkeley, California, and it was a submission of a school district there that's completely overhauled their school lunch system, and it was pretty amazing, actually. It's organic pinto beans and taco with, I think it was fresh fish or fresh chicken, I can't remember, that they make in-house.
Right, Ann Cooper?
Well, sort of vegetables.
Yeah, I think Ann Cooper, the Renegade Lunch Lady, she's been on...
exactly.
I think she's been on Patrick's, one of the other shows on our network here, talking about the school lunch reform in Berkeley. But that, I'm glad to see that there's a mixture on your website of good and bad. So
we would like it to be weighed more towards the good. Unfortunately, I think that Ann Cooper and other people specifically within the Berkeley... Napa Valley, part of California, that's a real leader in change. But unfortunately, I think the rest of the country has to head that way, too.
So last week, Katie Couric interviewed Michelle Obama, and a portion of the interview, Mrs. Obama talked about school lunch policy and kind of modeling the way on what kids eat. What are your thoughts on the interview?
I thought it was wonderful. I am so happy that Michelle Obama seems to understand what's going on and to understand the multiple issues involved. It's not only what we're serving at lunch, but it's also the habits that, that parents can teach to their kids. And thirdly, it's also having access to fresh fruits and vegetables in a variety of neighborhoods for a variety of income levels of families. So I really commend her initiative, and I think Katie Couric had the idea of a cookbook. I think that would be a good idea.
I know, that was really exciting. When she said that, she didn't say yay or nay, but it seems as if she's going to come up with a cookbook, and hopefully it's geared towards kids. That would be great. So how can Hot Grease listeners submit a photo to AmericanLunchroom.com?
You go to www.AmericanLunchroom.com, and there's actually a tab at the top that's submit, and it's the form right there. So you just upload any photo, any JPEG or other photo that you have on your computer or a camera hooked up to your computer. You upload it and just tell us where you're from and what the tray is of, and we'll put it on our site.
Great.
You can also follow us on Twitter. We have a Twitter account. The name is American Lunch, because American Lunchroom was too long, so we had to take American Lunch.
Okay, we'll make sure we put the American Lunch Twitter name in the tag for the show, as well as your website. Hillary, thank you so much for joining us on Hot Grease, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you, Nicole.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you again for listening to Hot Grease. Join me every Monday at 3:30 on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul.